Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
Coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper, and the place is on fire tonight.
Yes.
From the Mojo Dojo Casa House.
No. What?
Yeah.
What? That was weird all around.
Yeah. Yeah. This show is about as easy to wrangle as a cocaine cat. Okay.
Man, cats in general are hard to wrangle. Do you really need to add really cocaine to the deal?
Hey, that's a high-end cat, though. Cocaine's expensive. This is like a top hat and monocle kind of operation.
Seiko's a cocaine bear.
Most people are like, man, the medical bills for my cats are rough. No, my cat's cocaine addiction is the worst part of me having to pay for this thing.
He's legit on the streets.
He's got like an 8-ball a week. It's insane.
All right, here's what's going on in the show.
Calm it down, Whiskers.
This week.
It must be snowing outside.
Buva has an Ask the Pastor. What's the... give us a heads up on the Ask the Pastor.
It's about the Judas kiss.
Ooh.
It's bound to be good. Okay, I want you to just focus your mind on the Judas kiss, and that's Buva has a question about it.
I got a question
that
about
is stumped the people.
I'm reading my Bible this week, and I slowed down for a moment. Went what? Yeah.
Okay,
it's got to be a song there
now
somewhere.
Now the second item, I forget what the cat was. It is Buva an idiot? What was the categorization of the question?
I mean, that sounds like something you would want to ask the crowd. Is Buva an idiot? The only answer is yes. No, I want to know. I ran into a situation this last week, and I would like to know if I'm just a schmuck or if I'm thinking at least halfway right. Because like I have a feeling that it could go one of two ways.
Yep.
And I'm just interested to hear the crowd's perception, and then I would also like to open it up to those who would like to use the Live from the Path complaint line to let us know.
Okay.
That's 515-517-0085. Good. I'm glad you stepped in there because I started that train. I didn't know.
As I saw your face losing confidence throughout the end of the phone number, I was like, "That is like a child trying to memorize parents' phone number for the first time." That's 515-517-0085. I think
we've been doing this for like 12-13 years, whatever. Yeah. I don't think I could even say our website. I just like I just hear
live
and smile.
livefromthepath.org.
I don't. Yeah. See.
I don't know.
It's the name of the show.
I just trust you guys.
And then. Letting people know that we're an organization.
Hey, actually,
we must be something.
Here's where I sympathize with Dan. I find that like I get involved in just a wide variety of stuff, and some of those things like I'm directly responsible. And so like think of Dan's day to day life. He's responsible for 10,000 things at the church.
True.
And so if you get involved in a situation where you're like, you know what, I trust all of that to be handled by somebody else in some situation.
Let the professionals do it.
Yeah. That I think we probably have a website. I bet we may check that complaint line. Seems fine.
Check us out on our socials. I'm sure somebody does it.
Someone probably
does. It's out there.
Yeah. Hey, you got to do it somewhere. You can't run all the things.
Right,
so
I think
that's healthy, Dan.
You got to back off. No one to back off.
Mike backs out on the last two digits of our complaint line phone number.
I was about to put my wife's phone number in there because I couldn't remember what was up. Also, hey, my friend Will stopped by. Will, how's it going?
I'm doing good, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for introducing me earlier.
It's a good thing Will's here. Will's going to add a lot of commentary, and he's real wise.
Does he go by, are there any nicknames that he goes by, like Will the Hammer?
I don't really think we need to get into that.
Well.
Oh, that means there are some. They're
that's
embarrassing.
That's striking close to home there, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's none of your business.
All right. Anyway.
Does anybody call you William?
Will the Sickle is
not
in.
Will the Sickle? Is are you Russian?
okay.
I knew a Carl once.
All right. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to separate the Buva segments. By a few check-ins with the news story. So
I sound like an earthworm.
I want you to think about, keep thinking about the Judas kiss. Hold it in one hand. Is Buva an idiot is the first item. And then then we'll do a couple stories, and then we'll come back to the Judas question.
All right.
Okay, first, is Buva an idiot?
I mean, I feel like I gave it a perfectly understandable explanation, and then you keep coming back to, is Buva an idiot?
Okay, sorry, what did you call it?
I just want to know if I'm being a schmuck on something, or if I'm halfway, not being a schmuck.
Okay, can we just vote now?
This needs.
I think we should take a pre-vote.
Though.
I think that'd be understandable. Yeah, yeah. Across the room, is Boova being a schmuck or is he just a normal human being?
He the biggest jerk in the world. The world. The world.
Okay, Dan, what's your call?
I'm going to say Boop. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will?
Dan's yes on schmuck.
It's a hard yes.
Completely depends, but I would say any given day it's a yes.
Okay. The odds are ever in your favor. I think it's a no.
Hey, thanks.
I think you've made great strides in life. You know, the,
it's down to me.
It's thank down you. To you to thank tie you, it yeah. to tie it beforehand on whether or not I'm a schmuck. It's not down to
hold
you.
Hold on. I didn't finish my commentary. Move on. You've made great strides in life. The world is a box of crayons, and you, sir, are a maroon.
Does the box have the sharpener included? Because I always thought that was top shelf.
Oh, maybe too many I forgot that. About that. Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was. If you got a box of like the 64 crayons that did not have the sharpener in the back, yeah. Lame. Totally lame.
That was bad.
I think that was parents just trying their best to give their kids one good thing. If I can give you anything, kiddo, I'm giving you a box of crayons, built-in sharpener.
Right. That's a top shelf apartment complex.
Yes, exactly.
Christmas gift.
Nobody lived in a steady home had to have a crayon sharpener because that was the way to spend 60 cents extra to make your kiddo feel loved right. when Christmas was going to be real rough this year.
In absence of both parents, sir,
you
get
a sharpener.
Crayon.
Where's Dad at? Did you notice this has a crayon sharpener?
Good, because I wore down forest green.
That used to be his favorite color.
The only one I used, Daddy.
Oh, gosh. This got real sad. Okay. Is Boova schmuck, schmuck, schmuck.
Okay, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
All right.
Finish Boova.
So,
my vote's yes, by the way.
Yeah. I think that could have been left unsaid, actually. Sorry, I was in a situation this last week where someone had said something to me that was something that they needed to do on their car. And I had access to their vehicle. And I decided to just do it for them, yeah. just trying to be loving.
Yeah.
And so I did it, and I didn't do it so that they would, like, praise me. I did it because I wanted to show them love. Then a couple days had passed, and it seemed like the thing that I did was completely unnoticed.
Yeah.
Like, they did not even pay attention to the fact that, like, they had complained to me about something, and then it did not dawn on them at all that they no longer had to do it because it had already been taken care of.
Was this, like, mechanical?
Car wash.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, it's a mechanical car wash. So,
and it put gas in it,
full
of
the washer fluid.
Yeah, it's a thing that they said
something
they
you
needed
would
to do. Yeah, something you would think you would notice, right?
Okay.
And so, a couple days went past, and this person didn't notice at all. And so, I was just like, I'm not worried about the fact they didn't notice. Like, I didn't do this so that they'd be like, "Wow, you're the best. I really appreciate what you did." But I thought to myself, I want to tell them that I did it. Not because I want them to praise me, but because I want them to know that I love them. Like, I want them to feel the love that they no longer had to do the thing. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking to myself, like, should I do it or should I not? Because what I don't want this to turn into is any semblance of, like, hey, I want you to praise me. Or I want to feel good about the thing that I did. Because that was never the intention in the first place. I figured they'd go, oh, my gosh, thank you for doing that. Like, I know I had said it and I never thought to do it. And now I don't have to. Thank you for loving me. But I didn't. I didn't say anything. And I really was like, man, I don't want to be stuck in a situation where I think that it's anything about honoring me. I just want them to feel the love. And so I really wanted to know what you guys' thoughts would be on in that kind of situation. Like, is it, am I being selfish by even thinking this way? Or am I halfway not a schmuck? Because I really just want them to know that, like, they no longer have to worry about it. I love them. And it's done.
Oh, go ahead.
Aren't all indications that they're not worrying about it? Like, you already succeeded.
Seems and that's to be okay. totally fair. That's totally fair, yes. And that's why I wanted to ask the question, because I didn't think it was super obvious either way.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't want to be in a dangerous place where I'm like, I want to allow this to be spoken into because I don't want to hold that.
Is it your wife?
No.
Okay, yeah. Here's the thing. If it was my wife, I only need one person in this whole world to validate me besides Jesus Christ. And
Mike, I think
wife.
You're great.
And so I would immediately do anything, like wipe off the counter, and I would go find my wife and go, hey, I wiped the counter off. And then she would go, good job, I guess. That's a regular item. I'm like, thanks.
That's all I needed.
You did a thing that I've done 415 times this week.
Yeah,
yeah, but it did a good job, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
I wanted you to know I did it.
It's pathetic, really. But it is how I live my life.
Right. Actually, well, that turned a different way with Mike.
I was going to ask that, too, actually, because that is the one person where I the longer that my wife and I've been married, the less we are likely to appreciate some of the things the people in our house do.
Yeah, right.
And so as part of the way, and we're not great at this as far as how often we do it, but it's like when we check in with each other and like, hey, how are things going, blah, blah, blah. Like one of the things the person is asking the other person is there anything that you have done for me for my benefit that I did not notice?
Oh.
That specifically, not for the purpose of so that like they can lavish praise on you, but so that it right sizes in your mind the things that you just you get used to and start to ignore. That like, you know what? That guy always does this. My husband always does this for me. And like sometimes you just don't realize that this person is doing something to help you, or that like nothing feels worse than doing something kind of like you've done where you're like, I'm going to serve my wife in this way. And like, it's a nothing burger.
Right.
Like she does not notice. Now, but, and this I think applies to your situation here too, is that, your risk, if you live a life in which these are the types of things that you do, any one occasion is not worth talking about.
Yeah. Right. Right. Totally.
Now, I mean, if you've done this for a year, it's almost a funny story to eventually go, hey, do you realize you've not cleaned out the compartment on your driver's side door in your vehicle for a year? And like,
and you've never noticed that the trash that you put in there disappears.
Yes, right. No matter how many, and like, well, this is my family. How often I go into the car that my family travels in, I drive separately in my own vehicle most of the time. We have a family car. There's always like avocado mash and bananas, like things that stink and attract bugs.
Yeah.
And somehow they're in this family vehicle. And my wife claims that she doesn't do this. She's like just taking things up from the back from the children. I'm like, but it's still over there though. And so anyway, I clean this thing out every time I get in there, and I don't announce it because why?
Right.
But like at the end, but here's the thing is that realistically, I do it for her because like I don't look over there. I don't drive this car all the time. But I would say if it's one time, I wouldn't bother saying anything at all. Because like eventually someone, if you just live a life like this, they'll see it and they'll appreciate it all the more. That would be my
Fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say that the fact that you are thinking about it at all means you're thinking about it too much.
Mm.
Oh
yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's like that's just your life. That's who you are. You're a servant. So you just serve.
Yeah. And no, absolutely. And that's why I wanted to bring it up in the first place was because
so you're a schmuck.
I think that I'm going to go. Seems like the time that I should just leave.
Will, what do you think about this? Do you think Boo was being a schmuck, or he should really say something so that people could feel the love?
I don't really know.
It was wise words from Will the Sickle.
Yeah.
Will the Sickle really hammered it down.
Yeah.
I have a lot of life experience in this field. Yeah. A lot more experience living life than you guys have.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. As
and
you can
all tell.
And
has read to zero output on this particular question.
It's a fantastic argument for authority.
Yeah, it's just the one thing that I'm not too confident.
The vast collection
before.
Of my wisdom that has been fought for through eons of life. But unfortunately, fellas, you've stumbled on the one. You've stumbled on my Achilles heel of wisdom. The one weakness I have is, dang it, for serving people, it does kind of point back at you weirdly that you have so much life to live and none of it is about serving people, but that's whatever.
Yeah.
If we had asked the upholstery proclivities of 16th century Russian czars, Phil, the Sickle would have been like, ding, ding, ding. I'm ready.
This is no problem at all.
You know, and I say, that's exactly why I wanted to bring it up, was because of the fact that, like, I think that I do fight a really deep-seated need for validation that existed in me a really long time ago that I've fought for to kind of eliminate.
And maybe today still.
And maybe today still, which is exactly why I wanted to bring it up, because I'm willing to be open about that, to go, hey, am I being a schmuck about this?
Yeah.
And just let it go and leave it alone.
I don't think so. If I had to guess, I would say it's 80%. You just want to, there's 20% of like, I mean, a little bit though, want people to know that I love them. And there's a validation in it that like it meant something to them.
Yeah.
20% of which it's not distinct. 20% is for you. You benefit from that.
Sure, yeah.
And then the other 80% is just like, hey, man, I want you. I did an act of service as a love language. If this is the way I said I love you as an example, I want you to hear it.
Yeah, right.
Just like if you were to say it to your wife and she didn't hear it, you'd be like, hey, no, really, I wanted you to hear it.
Yes, exactly.
So like, I think it's a reasonable question. I think it accumulates with Dan's advice. As long as if you're spreading love all over the place, they're going to catch on.
Okay. I like that. Okay.
Hold on. Small caveat. Let's say that there was a baseball flying at somebody's head.
Yeah.
And you said, hey, man, you should duck. And they didn't hear you. And then you insisted upon it. Right? Like, would you just go, well, I don't want to make a big deal on the fact that I was trying to help somebody. And so you didn't say it again. But then if you say it the second time, now you've insisted that they hear you trying to help them, but they avoided getting hit by the baseball.
But then you're making it about you when they get hit by the baseball.
That's exactly
they're trying to
what
process.
I'm saying. So, like, you made it about you when you don't tell them, and you also made it about you when you did.
I feel like it has nothing to do with you. You just know that there's a baseball flying at somebody's head, and you were like, hey, you didn't hear me the first time, so I'm going to say it louder the second time.
I want you to really
I wouldn't
know.
Feel some weird, like, am I needing validated if my kid was running into the street, didn't hear me the first time, uh-huh. and so I raised my voice the second time, so they did.
Basically, sir, you just proved my point.
I don't follow this example
at all. Yeah,
this does not seem tracking at all for me.
The same situation. 515.
Would you tell me that if I were to see someone who was about to light themselves on fire, and I went, hey, don't.
No, don't light that.
And they were like, forget that guy. And I was like, no, really no. don't.
And he had a powdered donut. It was weird.
I made it about myself the second time. I raised my voice at him to not catch on fire.
Yes, exactly.
So here's how you solve that. Like, using your example, Mike, from cleaning off the counter. Let's say there's like flour all over the counter, and you're like, man, I'm going to clean this up. You only clean 95% of it. So 5% is left. So they're like, okay, you missed something. And you're like, oh, that's because I got the rest. Thanks for bringing it up. I missed that part. Sorry. So then you get the credit, and they notice you did it.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Wow. I feel really good about my original premise here because that's the thoughts that Dan has. It's
I'm
like,
saying,
hey, man,
you should
95% of the way fix a problem so that they notice that it's still there and they go, ah.
Well, otherwise, they wouldn't
there's
notice.
Enough flour there to make at least
clean,
three raviolis. What
clean.
Are you doing?
Okay.
Sweet Moses, Dan.
I think you got like, that would not fly at my place at all. Hey,
right. You would get berated more for having done 95 than zero.
Actually, I thought Dan was going to say, so Dan gave some advice to a question I had like 6 or 8 months ago. And it didn't change my perspective, but it brought it to a much finer point. I was approaching the question wrong. My question was, I kept finding myself going into restrooms, specifically in the Starbucks, but it could be in places where it's like a unisex bathroom.
Yeah,
you go in there, and some dude has Johnny Weissmullered all over the place. He's Tarzan all over the place. Yeah. Okay, and the thing you don't want to happen is you go in there and then you go use your bathroom and you do it in a proper way, and then there's a lady waiting to come in and she's going to think, hey,
she's gonna think you did the
that
hose.
Guy did it, and so I said, hey. You know, should I be obligated to clean this up? And Dan's answer was, no one should come in and stand and pee. You should clean it up regardless. And I'm like, doggone it, Dan. That's right.
Yeah.
That's a thoughtful way to do it. I was more concerned as to whether she thought I did it, not nobody should walk and pee if they can avoid it. And so I thought that was what Dan was going to say to this situation.
No,
he went with something else.
No, it went better.
Ben, you brought up an interesting thing that now is my second question, because in my marriage, there's one specific thing that happens where my wife, we have two cats, and like her chore, her responsibility is cat litter.
Yeah.
Like that's her thing. And every once in a while, like it'll pile up, no pun intended, and I'll go in and I'll do it.
Yeah.
And like I'll tell her that I did it. But it's not because I want her to go, oh my gosh, thank you so much for doing it, love. It's because I know how much it's sitting on her mind.
Yeah.
Like, she'll be dreading the fact that when she gets home from work, she's got to clean up all the cat poop. And like, I want to relieve her of that and just be like, hey, baby, by the way, I know this is on your mind. You're probably thinking about it right now. Don't worry about the cat litter. It's already done. And she'll go, oh my gosh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I really didn't say that so that I get a thank you. I said it so that it is no longer a chore in her mind that is weighing her down.
You go just so it doesn't seem too self-serving. You just have to have like a code word for it. She comes in and you go plop, plop, fizz, fizz, baby. And then she'll know what a relief it is. And ooh, she'll know that she doesn't have to worry about it.
Will, do you have any idea what he's talking about?
I love Dan's affirmations for me.
I do not.
He's passing them out.
Do you understand plop, plop, fizz, fizz? Oh, what a relief it is.
It's from an Alka-Seltzer commercial.
I so your answer is no, I don't understand.
Do you know what Alka-Seltzer is?
That is very correct.
Okay, yeah.
See,
yeah.
I do know what Alka-Seltzer
is. I was really interested to gauge the room on who all was getting the Alka-Seltzer reference.
Okay.
And it seems like it was about 80%.
I tell you what's funny. So in the last show we did, I was doing the audio editing on it, and I said the phrase, circle gets the square. And like, I have not heard or said that phrase for 20 years, probably. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea why that came out of my mouth. Boova, do you know what that's from?
Tic-tac-toe?
No. It's more specific than that. Mike, do you remember?
Yeah, it's the game show. The celebrity tic-tac-toe?
Yeah, it's celebrity. It's Hollywood Squares.
Hollywood Squares
is what it was called.
Oh!
Remember Don Knotts was on
there. Yeah, that thing that happened before I was alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I've had no occasion to say that, and it just came, and I feel like most of my references that are way out of date are referring to old commercials or TV shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're just in there.
Hey, if we're willing to call you out and paint the wall here, like I believe there are situations in which you just come up with your own phrases and it has nothing to do with something that happened on TV 30 years ago. It's just you going, I'm going to say this thing, and I'm going to say it confidently. Mm. And so everybody in the room just be like, yeah, that sounds about right, Ben.
Okay, that could be. Anyway, what's your favorite old-time game show? Uh-oh.
Do we just lose the show?
Hey, never mind. Hey, hello. Something is bumping in and out. Okay. Hey, I know that sounded real weird to you guys. I'm not going to fix it because I'm lazy, so we're just going to move on. I think it was – I was trying to get you to call the complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. I want to know your favorite – I say old-timey game show. I don't know how far back that has to go.
Think like what's the one with go whammy, stop, press your luck.
Press your luck, yeah.
About that era.
That's quality.
Never heard of that one.
Yeah.
What?
Really?
I used to watch Match Game.
Oh, well, yeah.
It was a match game.
Yeah.
Like, or it was a different year every year. I'd watch the New Year Day show, and then, it's Match Game 78.
I have to tell you, fellas, there's really only one game show I know, and it's the fastest growing internet game show, Secular vs. Solomon.
That's true.
I almost prepared one for tonight.
That would have been perfect.
What a letdown.
Now we got to like go record one after the fact and then plug that in there, because that would be great.
All right, here we go. So we'll resolve this question. I would say not a schmuck, but otherwise let it go.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. I'm willing to take that in. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. It's like a baseball is heading to somebody's head.
Oh, nobody. You're going to hit by a baseball. Hey, you didn't hear me. You're going to hit by a baseball. I don't know why you lose syllables as it goes. Hey, baseball.
Remember when Boo-Boo was doing that impression of that frog god? I laughed so hard at that, even on the replay. Who's this Yahweh?
Who's this Yahweh?
I thought it was, and I hate when I like what Boo was doing, and it happened to me.
Okay, the Christian Post had an article this week. A Catholic church in Missouri has issued an apology for its bulletin mistakenly featured an advertisement calling for the formation of a militia.
What?
What?
There's just the Catholic church in general?
No, it's in Missouri. Hold on. The ad... displayed in the June 16th bulletin. This I'm having a trouble. Like, this isn't the newspaper.
No, it's just
a
this
bulletin.
Is like, yeah, this is
like Margaret prints that every week, right?
Right.
Wait, does the Catholic Church sell space in their bulletin for advertisements?
It's not. Well, maybe. Oh, yeah, maybe it's an advertisement. So it says the ad displayed. Oh, wait. Yeah, the ad. You're right. Yeah. They're like selling space in there,
this
like the Coffee News. Yeah.
That is fantastic.
I'm going to start doing a bulletin again.
It urged young men aged 18 to 29 to join and protect the Holy Eucharist, congregation, clergy, and church grounds from potential threats. Wait, why would an external party take an ad out to say protect the ground? Something weird.
What's
protect
a Holy Ukulele?
Okay, just to clear up some Catholic things. Protect the Eucharist, that's communion,
communion
right?
Yeah.
Okay, so they basically have a communion guard. And then someone to watch the parishioners while they're in the seats, and then someone to patrol the grounds.
And the, yeah,
okay, got it.
Yeah.
That's called church security, I think.
Yeah, just normal, run in the middle.
Never heard of it called the militia.
You would get more people involved if you called it a militia.
You don't want the kind of people who would get involved once you started calling it a militia.
True.
that is one great way to figure out who you do not want to apply.
I don't know who these guys are, Carl and Beezy. But,
come join the church militia. AR-15 required.
Mary's headed to the priest to get the Eucharist. Take her out.
How good are you with a red dot, friend?
Yeah, I just got one name, Beezy. I'm on a furlough.
All right. It says the Ascension Catholic Church in Chesterfield swiftly retracted the advertisement through a post on the homepage of its website this week, clarifying that no militia was being formed and expressed regret over the ad's inclusion in the bulletin. The statement emphasized that the notion of needing a militia for church protection was inappropriate and unhelpful, and reassured the community that there had been no threats against the church. I mean, if they just said, to your earlier point, hey, we need some folks to help with security around here, Which, sure. Like, this does seem like you don't need a militia.
No.
But a guy or two around to make sure weirdness isn't happening. I'm not sure that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Call security. That's fine, too.
It says the advertisement, which included, the ad was from an individual who was recruiting members for a group he called the Legion of Sanctilana, according to the statement.
That is fantastic. Yeah. At the fact that this has been called a militia and is being referred to as a legion. This is amazing.
What does it mean?
What is a legion?
No. What is Sanctilana?
Oh, I don't know
is
that
it
part.
Is it two separate words or is it all one together?
Hold on.
Is it Saint Alana?
Sacred wool.
It is the Legion of Sacred Wool.
You have to wear a cloak?
If they're not, if that's wet's wolves in sheep's clothing, if I've ever heard of it.
Why are they guarding the communion and not the people?
Yeah.
And well, they said also the people.
Nobody can touch the blood.
Also, we're a little itchy. And maybe a little much in most weather.
I don't know. Okay.
Why are those guys always sweaty?
What's wrong with you, Beezy?
It's the wool.
Yeah, weird.
This is terrible, man.
Okay, this guy says the advertisement, which included a QR code with an application for membership.
Smartphone required.
Suggests that a militia would be formed and this group would be affiliated with Ascension Parish. This is, of course, untrue. To be perfectly clear, there's no militia being formed. Okay? And we regret that this item was included in the bulletin. Furthermore, the suggestion that our community might require a militia in order for us to celebrate the Eucharist is both inappropriate and unhelpful. Please be assured that there have been zero threats made against our community.
Please bring your tithes, offerings, and 9mm.
Please bring us your most recent spread at the target range.
Top scorer, Beezer T. Jenkins.
But none of those games. It better be at the profile of the criminal.
I don't. Okay, first of all, I have a lot of questions. One, if you're putting together a homemade Catholic Church type of brochure, like for every weekend, don't you think the word militia would stand out to you as you put it together on the computer and you're like, Tom's Flowers, 10% off. U-Haul rental militia.
Let's start a militia for the Eucharist.
Yeah, and could there be anything more Missouri white man sounding than a militia?
Hey man, I joined the Legion of Salamanca recently. It's awesome.
It's awesome. It's all about the woo.
Sacred wool. It's funny to think about. Now, I mean, some of this melds with how the Catholic Church thinks of the Eucharist itself. Yeah. But they also believe it happens in the moment, like that it's actually Christ's blood, but that it's in the moment. It's not like it's on the shelf.
Yeah, you don't have a vat of the Lord's blood. Yeah.
Because it would
that
be funny.
Needs to be protected.
Because the thought is like, what happens if you attack the Lord's blood? Like, you can't. It's already blood. Like, I don't.
You can't hurt it.
What's gonna happen?
Yeah, you could maybe spill it.
You can't defeat it. Is Eucharist, is Christ in there? Is that part of the word?
Are you trying to say that Charist is close to Christ?
Yeah, is that why?
I don't think so. Because I don't think that's Latin? Like Latin, not Greek.
Yeah.
Isn't it like the meal?
Well, it's a weird word to have, and like without it meaning something.
The militia of the Eucharist. Anyway.
Okay.
I thought that was.
We're going to let it go.
It's an awesome Catholic themed band name.
Yeah. I'd stay out of Missouri. That's.
But they have out of Missouri. They got militias everywhere.
They have secret societies and stuff, and some of the movies out there that maybe it's been a long standing thing. We just didn't know. We didn't know they were called the militia.
Yeah, that's true. We should call Dan Brown. Dan Brown has this kind of information.
He's still alive.
Who's Dan Brown?
He wrote the Tom Hanks. What am I thinking?
Oh, yeah.
The Da Vinci Code?
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to think of, but I couldn't think of the yeah.
That's amazing. He wrote the Tom Hanks. You know, Dan Brown.
You know what I was saying.
You know.
Dave Yellow. He was the best.
All right. Hey, also a follow-up from last week. Last week we were talking just a little bit about I said that there was a pastor who had inappropriate contact with a young lady.
Yep.
And had we were talking about it in the realm of we were overly focused on the restoration of the committer and not the protection of the victim in some of the stuff we were talking about. So just a quick update, that guy did resign from the church, which he totally shouldn't have been allowed to do in the first place, and so that's a right comeuppance. And I would anyway just letting you know that did not continue to go like the elders claimed that the version of events that they had been told was not near as severe as what actually happened.
Yeah, like, it was a younger woman.
Yeah, right.
Didn't mention she was 12.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. A young lady, not like a girl, a young girl.
She was just a younger woman.
Yeah. I mean, here's the deal. Check it out.
I'm
mean,
hot. Fellas, they go after me. Yeah. 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 It's like, I know you. You're a groomer.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a dirty pervo, and you got, yeah.
Just a heads up. The Eucharist, the word comes from the Greek word for Thanksgiving, and then it got translated into French, and the French is Eucharistē, and then now we say Old English Eucharist, and that's where it came from.
Interesting. But it's Thanksgiving.
Yeah. So the Eucharistē thing I said, possibly not the right rendering.
I didn't think it was, but I wasn't going to call
it. It sounded more Latino.
Eucharistē.
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 But in either way, it is definitely a Greek to French translation, which got us to Eucharist from Thanksgiving.
It happens.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right. And real quick, we're going to see if you are guilty of these seven big lies that Christians believe.
Oh, dear.
Will is guilty of at least three of these.
Sharpen it up, yep. Sickle. They're coming your way.
Mike's at two at least.
Okay. Here we go. Lies that Christians believe. You shouldn't tell God your struggles or doubts.
What?
I think you should hide them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty obvious in biblical history that like hiding things from the Lord works.
Okay, yeah. Now hold on. Before we're gonna give this list a fair shake because I want you to act like you have not been following Jesus for lifetimes.
Okay, I'll read the setup. Okay. As a Christian,
why would I do that? That sounds ridiculous.
As a Christian, you may have been led to believe that you shouldn't worry God with your struggles in life.
Okay, now by who would do something like that?
No, we're giving this a fair shake, Mike.
Yeah,
remember?
But they went cartoonish.
You said that more
it.
Than 30 seconds
it
ago.
It sounds like a guy in a trench coat's like, hey, let me tell you something.
Yeah, Sunday school teacher.
Second lie that most Christians believe. Jesus' name was actually Noah.
And Hector.
Yeah.
Jesus and Hector.
Listen to your friend John Pilsner.
It says, God has a whole universe to run, so he doesn't have time to deal with your small problem. This isn't true at all. God knows that living the Christian life can be hard at times, and there isn't always a clear answer or explanation to your problems. God wants to help you through your struggles and doubts. Being honest and open about the trials you are facing doesn't make you less religious. Instead, it actually brings you closer to God because it forces you to get rid of your pride.
It's difficult when I believe all the things that we believe in faith, of how holy and wonderful and powerful God is, and that you could ever believe that that same being that you're putting all this faith into is somehow boxed in by your understanding of what he can and can't do. Like, oh, he's got a whole universe to run. I can't possibly put on the worries from my life onto him.
Right.
I mean, he's got every star in the universe on lockdown. But like, oh boy, but if he only knew about my money troubles, it would just be too much for him to bear. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Here's the deal. It's like, you know what's interesting? Maybe we'll check these as we go through the list. But like, big lies that Christians believe, you would have a very hard time coming to most of these if you even did a cursory reading of your scriptures.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, so here's the thing. If you don't know whether you're believing big lies, like big lies can be told to you by people. Big lies are not told to you by scripture.
Right.
And so like if you hear, I care about, I know even the count of the hairs on your head. If you see Jesus going, no, let the little children come when the disciples had it wrong and they're trying to get him away. Like these types of pictures force you to go, you know, I was being a little bit silly there when I thought that God couldn't handle this.
Yeah.
And so it sounds, these are things that people can believe absent of any scriptural
right.
references
yes.
at
they,
all.
They should retitle this, Bad Assumptions by Biblically Illiterate People.
Seven things you might believe if you haven't opened your Bible yet.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
And so I say that to say, not to like, that's, it's not to shame you and like, well,
shame.
If you'd only read your Bible, dummy, you wouldn't be convinced of these lies. It's to tell you, this is why we do it though, is that like, we don't end up under the false impression of God based upon the thoughts of Steve, who just had an idea that he shared with other people that felt powerful to him, which is the internet ad hoc.
Yeah.
And
Steve's
so,
like, hey, man, don't burden the Lord with your problems.
That's right.
He's got enough
Form
to deal
militia.
With already.
Just
Form
Steve.
A militia with me. The militia of the sacred wolf.
You can handle it.
And we'll use Latin so it
you
doesn't sound
this.
Like we're little sheep.
Hey, steel wool would be a lot better militia
yeah.
name.
You gotta,
steel wool sounds like a terrible 80s cover band.
These
it's a Petra cover band is what it is.
Oh.
These dudes for sure cut their own jean shorts. You know what I'm saying? And they cut them high.
They're tactical, Mike. They're tactical. Oh, no. It allows me to have a belt that carries my nine, but still have some breathability from my knees.
I can see one of these fellas coming up to, like, protect the Eucharist during the week, and, like, the lady at the front mistaking them for a hobo. Like, here, sir, we've collected alms and bread for you. It's like, no, I'm here to protect the Eucharist.
That guy smells like Jimmy Buffett. What's he doing here?
Yeah, one drink only, Bill. Okay. Move on.
Number two. Lies that big lies that Christians believe. Your behavior affects God's love for you. Some Christians believe that those who sin less or are more religious are more loved by God. It can be easy to think this way and believe we have to work and get approval or love from God.
Again, you have to have not read the Bible.
Right. You know how God has a love meter on all of
now,
us, right? Yeah.
Now, hold on. I would contend, though, that to get God's approval, now not love and not like forgiveness, but approval might seem a lot like obedience.
Yeah.
And for God to say that man was obedient, you do actually have to do the thing.
God always loved Israel. He did not always approve of Israel.
Right.
Plus, the Bible uses love as an action. It's a verb, right? Like,
it's not a gas tank.
And so he says, if you love me, right, like in response to his love for us, you will X, right? And so, like,
obey my commandments.
If this is a completely one-sided relationship for you, where you're like, it doesn't matter how I feel about him, he just needs to love me, right? Like, then yes, the Bible can certainly back up that you can't shake that. His grace applies to all and to all equally. And so, like, that's true. But, like, to be in relationship, to be have an action and a verb associated with your love for him, there are results that should come out. There should be fruit on a tree.
Yeah. I know, like, this always seems like it's nitpicky, but, like, we have to be a little bit more precise with your words. Love, yes. Forgive, yes. Approve, I'd be a little bit more careful.
Yeah. You won't find those words. God doesn't say, I approve of you, son.
Yeah. That's right. I'm approved.
Guess who gets a gold star for today?
I struggle with this because people are like, I just want to know God's proud of me. And I'm like, why? Why? You know what I'm saying?
Says the dude who makes certain to tell his wife he wiped the table.
Now wait a minute.
Why do you need to be proud of?
But hold on. But the picture we get, the well done, good and faithful servant, has that vibe to it. And Jesus does look at it as like, this is something to go after.
Yeah, I would say people say to me after they not screwed up real bad, you know, they're like, I just want to know that God is still proud of me. And I'm like, he's not. Like, you are separating yourself from him by your actions, words, and deeds.
This is why I'm no longer in a Bible study with Mike.
He still loves you. None of that changed. Like, are we trying to act that he's like up there going like, good try, Gipper? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know that's what we really think happened.
Actually, it's weird. It's interesting that you said that. I was thinking probably about a week or so ago. I've said this on the show, and everybody in the room knows this. My family... we're not the best at building up of the children, and we need to do a better job of them feeling like unconditionally, like that, like we are for you, and regardless of whether the things that you are doing, that's still true. And so I was running through my mind because I feel like I always have room to get better at this type of thing. And one of the phrases that I was thinking of is it's like, could I look my kid at any time and go, I am proud of you? And I thought, No, that would be disingenuous. Because if I were to think of pride as in I would willingly, as a holistic person, yes, absolutely. But like any given moment, I might not just go, you know what? You just lied to me. You totally ate that cinnamon roll when no one else was looking. I wouldn't go, and I want to show you as an example to the world of everything that I'm proud of. Not that moment. Now, the person holistically, I love you very dearly, and I'm proud of you as a person, but, like, not every moment. And so I think of it similarly to this, so now I got to find other language, because, like, the children still need built up. They need to know that whatever their fallibilities, you are doing what – you are on earth standing in for what God is also doing, which is you cannot sin your way out of them not loving for you, caring about you, thinking you're, like, having hope for your life. So I need to find a different word, but I liken it to some of this, because that's if I look from my parenting perspective, like God's hanging in there with me, and I don't have to doubt that he's so mad or so irritated or that he would willingly proclaim his association with me, even in my worst. He would go, well, for sure, Ben's my son. Absolutely. Regardless of whether I just did the dumbest thing in the world.
Right. Like, I've struggled with that because actually you and I have talked about this before where I think you randomly texted me before the show one time was just like, do you think God is proud of you? And like, we're just along the lines of like, hey, just think about that. Like, are we looking for God's pride?
Yeah.
Like, is that kind of our measure? And I've thought about that for a long time. I don't think we ever got a chance to really talk about it. But like, it hit me because without thinking about that question, I would absolutely go, I hope God's proud of me. Like, I really hope God has pride in me, right? But like, the way that I've had to kind of approach that is to go, do I care? Do I care that God would go, yeah, you know, stamp of approval, I'm proud of you kind of perspective? Or do I care that God would judge me to be obedient and faithful? Like, I care about those being attributed to me in my relationship to him. I know that his love is eternal for me, no matter what, and all that stuff. But, like, I care more that I'm obedient to him as one of his kingdom people, right? And I care that I'm faithful to him as he is my God, my king. Like, those are the things that are my bellwether. It's not that I want God to feel a daddy pride in me. Like, I just want him to judge me to be faithful and obedient.
Yeah, it seems like the only person that I can think of in the Bible where God says he's well pleased with someone who actually went to the cross.
Yeah, right.
So that we could be justified because we can't please him.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that we could
by definition.
Have his. Yeah, I mean.
So, kind of the whole point of the story.
Yeah. I mean, it could be wrong. That's just an initial over the.
But what
about
the feels, Dan? I want to feel good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's okay. We just have to hold more than one thing in tandem.
Right.
Love is not so simple. Well, love itself is, but like your relationship with people is not like if they're happy with me, then they love me. If they're unhappy with me, then they hate me. Yeah. That doesn't work in human relationships. God's relationship with us is more nuanced than that as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Next, number three, big lies that Christians believe. Church leadership is only for the super holy. I don't know what the super holy means.
Well, have you ever met a super holy person?
No.
Okay, is your name Will?
I thought you said Will.
Will?
Yeah.
Have you ever met a super holy person?
If you called him the sickle, people would make
this mistake.
I'm sorry.
The sickle? Have you ever met a super holy person?
I would say I have.
Oh. Would you be willing to give their first name?
I don't know. First one that comes to mind is probably Troy.
Yeah, never felt such pride in my life.
Who's that?
Dang it, I said the wrong name to say.
Yeah, not Booba, a different Troy. Yeah.
A different one.
Different guy.
He just
kissed
my friend.
Troy Aikman? Troy Aikman, the quarterback. Yeah, super holy guy.
He was on America's team.
Yeah.
So here's the write-up. Pastors, missionaries, and other church leadership are reserved for only the most holy of souls. That's the big lie. The top 1% of the church body that are actually seriously in love with Christ and are being called to do bigger and better things.
That is a rough percentage.
Seriously in love. This is a very ingrained way of thinking that there are some that are more holy than others. Scripture, however, paints a very different picture.
Yes.
Everyone is just as anointed as the person next to them, and we are all being called on by God. No matter if you are a pastor, housewife, teacher, nurse, or janitor, they're missing a comma. God has something great planned for your future. No matter where you start out in life, you can be part of church leadership if you feel that's where God is asking you to take your talents. Oh, it just took a weird turn there.
Yes, it did.
It just took a weird turn. You can be the housewife, and you do that. You don't have to be in the church leadership.
Also, are missionaries a part of the church leadership?
No. Well, here's the thing. If people are saying yes to God's invitation. Like, they experience him more when they say yes, right? When God says, here, I want you to do this. Here, this is my plan for your life. Here, I want you to make this decision. Here, my scripture has convicted you in this way. Hey, the Holy Spirit is leading you to do a thing. Like, it's a relationship and a participation from you. And so, like, they're not 1% super holy. They're just saying yes to things. And so, like, can you be a pastor and say no to all those things? Yes, you absolutely can. You are in church leadership, and you are not listening to the Holy Spirit. You are not following your directions that God has for your life. He's trying to speak into your life and say things and send people and all kinds of stuff. And you're like, no. So, like, you can be – it has zero to do with a leadership thing. It has way more to do with you saying yes to the things that God is offering.
You should take a look through the Bible. and see the kind of people that God calls to do big jobs.
Yeah.
And then go maybe read one chapter past when God calls them to do the big job, and usually it goes pretty rough from there. Like, there's some obedience, but it never goes like, and then they lived happily ever after and did all the right things forever, and God was well pleased, except for Jesus. Like,
yeah.
It's always like, hey, Moses did some good stuff, but then there was a lot of rough, and David was called to be this, but then there was a lot of rough.
Oh. Yeah, honestly, like, look at almost every single person that we would consider a biblical hero.
Right.
And then go, they went from basically murderer to church leadership.
And then sometimes back into something.
Yeah, they went from Baal worshiper to church leadership, right? They went from whatever, like, God redeemed them out of all kinds of things, and then used that grace and redemption to pour back into the world, leading other people to experience the same thing.
Now, there is something to be said that there is a responsibility that is different on those that are called into leadership, but that does not equate to a holiness on those.
Yeah, so if you think of the word holy as being set apart,
right.
I was trying to think through whether I would even consider anybody of having a role post-Jesus that I would consider as actually set apart. Distinct.
Right.
Like, specific, yes, but not apart from, a part of which there is a specificity to the thing that they're doing. Now, the Bible does talk about leaders as being judged differently, held
yep.
accountable in different ways.
Right.
But again, that's just the nature of the distinction of which God has provided you to function under. Not something, again, they're not, it's not pastor and flock. Like, it is, you are a part of a thing of which there is a particular role and responsibility. This gets to where Paul is like, some of us are preachers, some of us are teachers, some of us are like yep. those types of prophets and things. And so I think it's probably not valuable to think of it as hierarchical. But to Mike's point, there is an obedience question to
yep.
it. Like, in whatever the thing is that you are called to be doing, are you walking faithfully in that, regardless of whether you have the influence that a pastor may have for having taken on that responsibility, or the influence that a housewife may have over the direct souls in your care,
right?
Which is the exact same influence, if in fact deeper than the types of things that a pastor has an influence on.
Agreed.
That's a big lie.
Okay. Number whatever. I think we're at four. Number four. Big lies that Christians believe: the Bible is only a rule book. Some people find reading.
We're not going to read this. That's dumb.
Okay. I will tell you that there was a. there's a very good set of podcasts that the Bible Project did around how to think about
yes.
the Bible. And it's them. They're just, they set out like, here's our theology basically. Cause like, there's always a bunch of questions about those guys and like, hey, how do you, what's your theology here? And like, how do we view the Bible as the Bible Project? It's super interesting. And one of the things they do a very good job of is like, they're not trying to say the Bible's not a rule book because they don't want to be bound by it. They're like, you're literally not reading it correctly to approach it in some of those ways, even though it has an implication to you. And so I would recommend, I thought that they did a great job. I don't remember the names of them, but just look back in the Bible Project's history when they talk about like, what do we believe about the Bible? It's a pretty good set of podcasts.
Tim Mackey's good stuff.
Here we go. Church isn't important. Mm. Going to church can feel like something that you have to do. The Sickle was saying that just before the show started.
Going to.
He said, not something that you want to do. It becomes a part of your weekly routine, but isn't something you give much effort to. I don't know what you mean by effort. Like, yeah. You run into the place?
Yeah. I mean, whether you walk, stroll, or take a cab, I mean, you got there, didn't you?
Yeah. You know you have a relationship with God, so church isn't important. But church is so much more than that. We should be seeing church as a body, not just a building. The Bible talks about the church as a living and breathing entity, like a hive mind, if you want to think of it that way. Church isn't just a place you came to sing. You know what I'm saying, Boova?
Yes, I do.
Church isn't just a place you come to sing and hear some preaching. It's a place where you make connections with other Christians. Chop it up and embrace the body of Christ.
Chop it up.
Okay, she didn't say that. I added that in. It felt active. We're going to go chop it up.
I hate that so much.
I shouldn't be allowed to do things.
Yeah, I think if you read your Bible, I don't know if you're ever going to find the phrase going to church.
Now, I talked to a guy. When we started the house church, I met with a guy who was very averse to it. And his position was, I said, it's not the building. He's like, God set up a building. He put a tabernacle. He did a temple. He's obviously not averse to the pattern of going to a place. It was a right critique, right? Like, it's the right question. It was like, look how God has behaved. He cannot be averse to a central place of meeting as if it is the source of devilry, given that he expressly set it up that way. He's told, now, I didn't believe that anyway, but like it was, that was his critique. Which, like, the right answer is, well, I mean, then talk to Paul and talk to everybody who did. Basically, the first 100 years of the church was in houses, and so, and they didn't think it was wrong.
Also,
so,
the central place in those situations was his place.
Yes,
it was where he resided.
That's right.
His seat was there,
and so where the notion of where his presence lives within humanity changes,
has changed.
Then the notion of where you engage with that also changes.
Exactly.
Right, and like that was the conversation we had, but. It wasn't. I don't think you have to antagonize the structure. Without always, but also asking the question: what does it mean to? And is it okay not to go to the thing? Well, it might be, but it's not okay to completely disengage.
Yeah.
To the thing that Jesus' relationship is actually with, which is the church.
Right. God sets this up because you need to be in communion with other people because they need to be able to speak into your life. You need to learn from them. You need to be loving on one another and fulfilling, being obedient to God's commands with them as a group. Like there's work to be done and you can work with workers to do it.
Yeah. So actually this brings up a really good question. And Dan, I'd be curious how you've engaged with this question, because one of the things that I've noticed is that the more you take the structure of like what does it mean to go to church away from something that feels formal, and again, like my environment invites this, and house church invites this, because like it's not as structural, it's looser, it could be anybody's house. If that's church, and I would say the community is. I've had people say, well, I go to my kid has sports on a Sunday and I go hang out with those people and we talk, we commune, we interact. That's my church. It's got the things that you're saying. Sometimes we'll pray together there and we talk about things that are going on and share our struggles and all the while taking in the ball game. Like, and I think there's always an interesting balance is you try to tear down things that appeal feel like they're facades, you run the risk also of then like, well, where did the line go when people are like, well, then this counts as my mm-hmm. church. And how do you, so Dan, like, are you running into anything like that? And how would you speak to it?
Boy, I had all kinds of things going through my mind. So if someone's idea of the church is a worship service, then they're not going to church anyway. They're going to a show. They're going to an event.
Yep.
The church is the community. It's the involvement in a mission, the body of Christ, and doing kingdom work. And so it goes way beyond the walls and the time frame of a Sunday morning at 9 o'clock and 10:30. That might be part of it. It's a small part of it, actually. It's the smallest part of it. It's the engagement that we do together in the name of Christ, wherever we go, whatever we do. And so if you're missing that, if your idea of going to church is just that service, then you've missed the boat completely.
Yep.
So, yep. You know, I don't know if that really answers your question, but our challenge has always been to go beyond. That's like an entry point. It's a front door.
Yeah. Yep.
And we say, okay, good, you've made here. That's a step one. Great. Yep. Now let me introduce you to the mission of Jesus Christ, and let's do this, you know, and then we grab them and we go around and do stuff.
So an interesting follow-up question then is, let's say if someone is otherwise doing it, like they're living a life following Jesus, they're interacting with folks kind of throughout all the week, how important is the gathering? Is what we would traditionally think of as a Sunday service or like an intentional commuting for that is often doing things like worship and mm-hmm. preaching and stuff?
I mean, I'd say that's a critical part of the body gathering together for worship and teaching and celebration and the whole thing. I don't care if it's on a Sunday or if it's a Saturday or a Monday or a Tuesday or whatever, or if it's in sometimes smaller settings or bigger settings or whatever. I mean, I don't know if that's a big a deal to me. You look at the New Testament church, they met every day in the temple courts.
Right.
You know, I mean, as in, and they weren't necessarily going to temple, you know, and some of them probably were. But they were gathering. That was the marketplace of ideas and teaching and focusing on God. So,
that's where it's interesting to me that the question of where if it's otherwise integrated in your life. Is there a place, like let's say you the folks who are doing it every day. Every indication I think that we have historically is that the early church still like they there was something specific mm-hmm. about their meeting on a particular day. It was like, yeah. and it was Sunday for them. Like that's yeah. when they would yeah. have done it. And so I think they're what you don't see. We know that from church history. We don't really know that from the New Testament. The New Testament doesn't say, hey, one, we moved the Sabbath to Sunday. It also doesn't say, hey, this is our, this is how we do church as an event, right? Mm-hmm. It very much felt more organic and missional and communal in those types of things. And so, like, one of the things to even speak to this conversation, I thought, well, I can't really point to somewhere in the New Testament where it's like, yes, where everything else, if you're meeting with other people and integrated into your life, this is the thing. You have to keep doing this particular event. Its absence doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. And like, again, the every pattern of the early church would tell me that they did do it and they mm-hmm. did find a value to it. But I think there's a squidginess to it because it's not dictated. That particular mm-hmm. shape is not dictated. So yeah. You know, it's interesting.
I mean, there was definitely teaching. There was preaching. There was a Lord's Supper and then – when they did decide how to do it in Corinth, you know, Paul's like, hey, guys, you guys are messing this up. You know, uh-huh. they just went overboard. So there are elements that are definitely part of what the church does yeah. together.
And yeah, that's a good point. Like, I would maybe if you were otherwise meeting kind of every day and these elements existed, then, I don't, you know, maybe it's less of a deal. But, like, if generally culturally – this is the opportunity where someone's showing up. There is a teaching or an interaction with Scripture and an active prayer. That's not just, oh, we shared life updates and we prayed a little bit about things. Like these elements of communal worship, not ticking the box, but like we want to be a part of those and we want to be refined by the preaching and sharing of God's word. Those would be the elements where, like, I don't know, if every hour, if an hour for every day you happen to make all that stuff happened. Maybe, like, what are we yeah. even talking about? Maybe I don't care at all. But yeah. if it's not happening, then it's probably best to align to the pattern that's existing throughout
yeah,
most
yeah.
churches. Yeah.
I spoke of this recently that you know, the church attendance has declined, like, in national surveys. And what used to be, you know, an active church member was four times a month, and then it's like two times a month. And now it's like once in a while. Which I wouldn't be so worried about if they were still engaged in things like Scripture and
right,
prayer
right.
and worship and whatever. But they're not making up for the time. That was like their only hour they got anyway. And now yep. now they're down to like an hour a week a month, I mean, rather than maybe yeah. 4 hours a month. And so they're becoming biblically illiterate, and they're coming up with lists like this. And they don't understand God, or and they don't understand their faith at all.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things that's tough here is there is – I don't want to use the word consequence, although that's half in my mind. There is an impact to this, and you're not going to notice – you may not notice it at the time, but, like, it does start to show up where, like, some of the things that you would expect – parents especially, like, especially if you've got a faith background, I often worry about this. Especially in our house church context, most of the people that are in a context like this have a basic familiarity with the things that are going on. And so you can kind of teach and interact with that level. And one of the risks we have is that, like, our kids don't have the same – they didn't learn all the stuff that we learned. Mm-hmm. They're not coming from the same background. And so, like, if you don't otherwise make sure to go back and pick up – like, what I believe now and the habits that I have, the theology that is in my mind of what I think about Jesus has happened from 1,000 church services and – you know, an every week accountability group with some dudes that I haven't done with specifically for 10, 15 years, 10 years probably, but I did do, and small groups that we no longer engage in as often, but I did do. And all those things lead up to kind of like a level of maturation mm-hmm. that, like, maybe I don't have to have because of a season of life, but without – other people may still need, or that were fundamental to how I matured in the faith. And so I think it's just a caution. There's a consequence to these things. And make sure you don't just see it through I don't need to be there every Sunday. I kind of know all this stuff. But to your kids? Mm-hmm. And is the thing that you have in your mind, is that translating to them and their interactions with the world? And I'm hesitant that it does. Like, right. that we're missing out simply because we're living to our own maturity, not – the people who that we're yeah. you know, working with. Listen,
that's what I get concerned when we're teaching our children that, well, this ball game is more important yeah. than our time we've set aside for biblical instruction and
yeah.
time with our church family. Because you teach them that when they're 12, you know, then they hit 20. They've already decided, well, it's not too hard to find something more exciting than church.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just lots of things out there, lots of sparkly things. And then it just becomes unimportant. And then they miss, they just have those gaps of faith, of knowledge. And
So. What were you saying, Mike?
We're going to have to cut half of the things that you said we were going to get done today, Ben.
What?
Half.
Oh, hold on. Hold on. No, we're doing fine.
That's pressure.
Okay.
you can't listen. This was a throwaway article, Ben. Throwaway.
It's true.
Okay.
We're 40 minutes into this.
Okay, ready? Yes or no? God uses his power to teach people a lesson.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Hold on. God, don't ever let people convince you that the bad things that happen to you in life are because God wants to teach you a lesson.
Hebrews. What?
Yeah.
We're leaving it alone, but I'm telling you what, yes, he does.
Yeah.
He will let sin consequences follow you for repentance.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. God believe, even if you were to try to believe that, God does not, incite something that otherwise might be considered. I mean, there's an angel tussle in, Daniel that you got to reckon with.
Yes.
God believes money is pure evil.
False.
Okay. Yeah. False. What do you think, Sickle?
I agree with Mike.
Okay. Solid.
As usual.
Thanks.
Terrible way to do things.
Hammer.
Okay, that's it. That's the end of the article. Boom. Ask the pastor.
All right, so I'm reading through Matthew 26 this last week.
Yep.
And I get to the point where Judas is betraying Jesus, right? And he goes and he says, "What will you give me?" And then he says, "The one who I kiss will be the one to seize," essentially.
Yeah.
This is Jesus.
Yeah.
We've got quite a few chapters of him causing scenes all over the place, like big deals, and like enough to where the chief priests, the elders of the people, are amassing at the home of Caiaphas, and they are ready to like plot in secret to go take this man into custody to get him out of here, right?
Yep.
Why the heck did they need someone to show them who's Jesus? Like, it makes no sense to me.
Because I don't think the temple, it was the temple guards. It wasn't the Pharisees and the Sadducees coming out there.
They were
it
all
was,
going to the games. They weren't going to church.
Yeah, these are the rough and tumble blue collars. They don't give a crap about none of this.
I he's the only white guy in the crowd. I don't.
Right.
I don't understand.
They're like, hey, we're all olive skinned. And then there's this Anglo-Saxon man that looks like Ewan McGregor. Like, of course that's Jesus. He's the one who's European shining, heart. Right? It's like,
hey,
yeah, he's the
who's
one
that Anglo-Saxon? Let's arrest him.
Is that Obi-Wan Kenobi? Arrest him!
Oh, no.
I just, okay, it, but...
It's the blue collars, that's why.
That's interesting. Like, I did not read that from that at all. Like, I just, it made no sense to me because I thought it was the chief priests and the elders.
They don't do actual arresting. They're too pious. They send out the juice.
But then these people are in the streets... Like, people are recognizing Jesus all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, remember, like, you're at the time of Passover. There's, like, a few hundred thousand Jews in the area. And
in the garden?
No, but, like, could you, but the way that they would recognize him is, like, well, he caused trouble in the temple courts, right?
Okay, yeah.
So, like, otherwise, it's not like there's pictures of Jesus hanging around. And every indication we have is he's a pretty normal-looking Arabian dude. And so, like—
Anglo-Saxon, right.
So like, he doesn't stand out except for the people are surrounding and following him or something like that. And so even if you're the temple guard, he's caused some disturbances of which you may have been able to pick out it's him. But, like, it's also, think of it as, it's possible that they don't recognize him, which I think is...
Well, the high priest servant was there, though.
That's
who gets his hair
right,
cut
off.
Right,
the one that Peter cuts?
Yeah.
Oh,
so he would have known.
That's true. He likely would have known.
You would think, I mean...
He likely would have known.
See?
I think
I'm
it's
not as dumb as you're making
that.
Me seem.
Well, okay, well, think of it this way, too. When they put someone in front of a lineup, like, they obviously know the guy's in there, right?
Right.
But there's something about having substantiated that guy in that moment pointed to the perpetrator. And so that's what Judas is doing. In the lineup of the 12 disciples plus Jesus, that's the lineup. And Judas is affirming, yes, you think that's the man? I confirm that's the man. Right? Like, think of it as it's a legal finger pointing that says, we made no mistake. There was a man on the scene who affirmed that this was the guy.
I suppose that does make sense, because they would have, like, they would have needed an accusation.
Yeah. In That's order like Jesus to, like, said, well, why are you here? Well, he knew why they were there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah. Like, I recognize that part. Like, I knew Jesus full well knew that, like, I'm the guy. Yeah. Like, I'm the one. You know, why are you coming against me? Like, this is a peaceful situation, fellas. You need to come at me like robbers?
Yeah.
I think some of that stuff specifically fulfills prophecy, too, that you could look at, that you know, God said there'd be a betrayer, God said blah, blah, blah. And they could
say,
see him right here.
And that's fair. Yeah. And I guess when I'm thinking about that, I think that the setup was enough to fulfill. Obviously, I'm not the one who determines what fulfills prophecy or not. I'm not making that claim.
I think we're good.
I wrote a book.
Hey, God, I think we're good on this one. Judah doesn't have to kiss you. Like, that's weird. Okay,
yeah.
I'm willing to accept that then. Okay. I guess I was not looking into it that way, because I was very confused, thinking like Jesus has been doing this publicly for a long time now, and so it did not make sense to me that there's any situation in which they're like, hey, Jesus is offended and like hardcore offended these people to the extent that like they're ready to crucify him, and then they need to be. He needs to be pointed out. Just
also,
felt weirdly like contentious to
it's
me.
It's dark out, and they got torches, and it's hard to make out people's faces.
Yeah, that could be true.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Fair enough.
Almost every reason you thought was not the reason is definitely the reason.
Yeah.
Which one major role is Jesus of Nazareth?
Yeah. Blue collar dudes with torches, mostly to
blame. Why do you have to make it blue collar?
This is Malchus.
Is that because you can't see yourself in any situation unless it's that?
No. But the Pharisees don't get their phylacteries dirty, and the temple guard is not allowed to go roam out checking the stuff around. Like, they just send them out. They just
got some brigands.
And yeah, they get brigands.
If they saw Jesus, they typically probably wouldn't have been as close as some of the other people.
Right.
True.
You know?
Yeah,
so it's like,
that's fair.
I've seen you from a distance. Is that
torches?
Ah, okay.
Is that him?
Yeah. You know? Ah, okay. Yeah. All right. All right.
Is that him?
Yeah. What Buddha was saying is like, don't they all look the same?
Yeah.
Those people.
Racist.
It was a rude thing what he said.
It was.
What? That took a turn.
Yeah.
Y'all started this with the Anglo-Saxon stuff. I did not bring race into
the deal. Like, I get why they couldn't recognize
Level four, Booba. Like level four.
No one knows what that means except for you and me.
And the sickle.
The sickle don't speak.
Can't forget about the sickle.
You could definitely forget about the sickle.
This feels like a presidential campaign slogan.
Don't forget about the sickle.
Don't forget about the sickle. Okay. All right. You're listening live from the Path. If you're offended at Booba's question, that's 515-517-0085.
What is it, Mike?
Call or text. If you just want to text level four, that would be fine. Also, no one did the impression that we talked about in the last show.
Oh, man.
And I expected Dan to do it. I know we put him on the spot, but I expected on Thursday morning to get a doot-doot-doot-doot-doot Murphy from Dan, and he did not do it, and I've been disappointed in him ever since. I've had to repent of it. It was unfair.
Listen to me. The masses that line up to watch Live from the Path every time we put something out.
They're introverts.
Just prove to me that you're real. Yeah. Like, even if it's just a smiley face. Like, if you were to text us a smiley face, I think Ben and I would have a great week. Because we'd go, hey, man, someone text us on the Live from the Path complaint line.
Yeah.
And so they'd be like, what is it? Like, it was dumb. It was a smiley face. But somebody did it. Please let Mike know that you're there. He's the kind of fella that really needs to know that you approve of him.
Yeah.
And that you're proud of him.
I need a lot of affirmation.
You know what? As a matter of fact, text the Bob Eisenlauer Live from the Path complaint line and let Mike know that you're proud of him.
I saw Bob Eisenlauer this week.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're Bob Eisenlauer, if you could text Mike Foost at the Bob Eisenlauer Live from the Path complaint line, that's 515-517-0085.
Here's what I did.
Just say, Mike, buddy, blue collar man, I'm proud of you.
I saw Bob Eisenlauer coming out of the bathroom at a Cubs game. And I text him, I'm like, Bob Eisenlauer, you coming out of the bathroom at a Cubs game? And he's like, yeah, I was. I was like, how you doing? He's like, pretty good. How are you doing? And then we talked a little while, and then we parted ways.
That's a real creepy story. I would not expect Bob to say anything to the Bob Eisenlauer.
I didn't say it out loud like, hey, I see you coming out of the bathroom.
Watching your bathroom habits.
Yeah, that's also a weird way to have any interaction. Like, you don't usually say, hey, I noticed you just came out from somewhere.
Something regular that I would
do. I've never walked up to a Starbucks, someone's leaving the Starbucks, and I go, hey, man, you're leaving the Starbucks, aren't you?
Yeah, I just saw you leaving the Starbucks, you pretentious tool.
I would
you spent $7.50 on that coffee. How are you and Jesus?
It's level three. I would definitely do both those things, absolutely.
Yeah.
Pretentious isn't a swear.
No, it's a tool, Ben.
That's a level two. I don't know what the levels are. This is new to me. All right, let's give out some advice.
Okay, now, hold on. You told everybody we're going to do an article from Dan about buying real estate in Mexico.
Ah, shoot. Yeah. I totally forgot.
Did you? I don't even remember that setup.
Yeah, he goes, Dan's got an article, and then he went on this seven traits of the church.
There'll be time next week.
Okay, I'm interested to go back because I don't think he said that.
It's still for
it won't sell out.
There you go. Dare Life from the Path.
Don't forget the sickle.
I'm a single retired grandpa in the South. My daughter, 50, has hitched her wagon to an Alky. She's circling the drain and going down with them. My grandsons are adults and scattered around the country. They are lazy, and none of them have a full-time job. We used to keep them during the summers until they're mid-teens. Now I don't hear from them unless I call, and then it's just a bunch of one-word answers. Fine, okay, and yup. My daughter has no retirement savings or company retirement plan. She doesn't call either. She lives 4 hours away. I'm certain my home, property, and possessions are their planned retirement accounts. All I need to do is die. I worked my entire life, spanning a couple of full careers, and I owe nothing to anyone. I have visions of my possessions being destroyed by a couple of alcoholics or sold off for quick cash. I've decided my estate will be all donated to my favorite charity, a worthwhile cause where it will truly mean something to people who care.
Pathway Church.
Should I let my daughter and grandkids know now so they have an opportunity to change course and prepare, or let them be surprised after they don't go to my funeral? Disappointed grandpappy.
Okay, I'm a level 3 alert. That guy's a pretentious tool. Here's the thing. He's like, he's got nothing good to say about any of his family,
yep. And
nobody calls him. It's because he's that level 3 thing I said.
I'm guessing this man lost his wife, too, and he's real sad about it.
We only knew who the father was. Oh, wait, him.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And he's separated himself from any of these consequences, and that makes him the PT thing I said.
Is it because he's not sad that these are lost, he's more self-righteous about it?
Yeah.
If he was sad that he, or mourning the fact that these relationships were not continuing, this
because
would
they're
be a
hurting
different story.
Me.
I mean, I'm not against what he did.
No.
Like, he doesn't owe them his inheritance or their inheritance. Like, yeah. I think it's fine that he did that. I think there's some relationship mending that might need to happen.
He hasn't really done anything yet.
Oh, yeah. He did it. He's asking about if he should tell them or not.
No, yeah, well, but think of it. It's he's like, this is the only thing that they value about me. He doesn't know that. That's the way that he reads the world.
That's true.
He reads the world as if, which means that's the thing that he cares about, the thing that represents his value. And so, like,
oh, that's undoubted. The fact that he cares about the fact that his you know, properties are going to be squandered and sold away, you're dead.
I'd be more concerned that my family's turned into a real dump
exactly
show.
Exactly right, yes.
Yeah, they're giving him one word, you know, answer. So let's say Grandpa calls you up on the phone and says, hey, Booba, I could be dead and you don't even know it. Why don't you ever do anything? Where's your job? Why don't you get a job? Could you get a haircut?
Yeah.
Man, you're a disappointment to me.
You know what I would do?
You just
dig
want my money, don't you?
Dig that man's grave.
Yep.
How's your day?
Yeah.
How's your day? Do you love me?
Yeah. Yeah, did you know that you're a worthless sack of crap?
Yeah, exactly.
And you can't even keep a full-time job, and I hate you, and your mother's hitched up to an alky,
you're all
and
losers.
I hate her, too. Tell
big
me about your summer, buddy. How's it been?
His daughter's 50. Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, and I mean, if maybe he's done a ton of other things, and
it's been 20 years since
he didn't mention any of them.
He worked two careers.
Yeah, here's the this is very self-centered. I feel like my letter would be, actually, I probably wouldn't be asking advice, but I would be like, I got these properties at my disposal. I'm thinking about going reverse mortgage to free up some cash to try to pay to bring some of these people here to live with me to help get them set up on the straight and narrow. Because wherever something failed, then it's probably me, and I'm gonna do whatever I can to rectify before I kick the bucket.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Save the right thing, you old codger.
Sickle.
Two.
Where are you at on this?
I agree.
Excellent.
Remind me of myself at your age.
Dan?
Devilishly handsome.
Which, in fact, I was probably sitting almost exactly where you are at that time.
Dan, you got any follow-ups?
No, Roger. No. I like what Ben said. I think that he needs to invest in a relationship, and he's way too worried about where the money is right now or about the money at all. Just live your life, do your thing, but try to re-engage the family and try to be dad. I mean, not like dad to a 5-year-old, but dad to an adult.
Yeah,
child and adult grandchildren, and let the relationship breathe a little bit.
Yeah, you know, the one thing I would say about trying to put some of those relationships back together is you got to lower your bar of expectations for the other people involved. If it's important to you, do it. Hey, they don't call me, then continue to call them. It sounds like you're retired. Like, if you got the time, what is the big deal that they like? There's a butt hurt thing in there that goes, I insist that they dial me.
Yeah.
But like, if you want to talk to them, then call them. And that's kind of fine. And so I just, if you gotta get away from some of these distinctions that you're trying to make Maybe you're carrying the time load and the remembering load and whatever. If it's righteous, then do it and stop complaining that they're not doing it.
Secular says, I will assume that you have put your decision in writing and your lawyer is aware of it. Your daughter should be informed in the context of advanced planning. Who will be the executor of your will? What kind of funeral memorial you intend to have? And where you have arranged to be buried and how you'll be the disposing of your assets?
Hey, man, I would not tell my daughter that she's the one who gets to plan my end-of-life celebration at the same time I tell her I'm cutting out.
Yeah.
You got to find someone at the local Legion Hall or something.
Yeah, I'd let the lawyer do all this.
I'm sure you've got friends everywhere.
Yeah, sounds like a friendly guy.
If you are concerned that it will degenerate into an unpleasant conversation, ask your attorney to serve as a buffer and do it for you. I guarantee that word will reach your grandchildren like wildfire.
Why? Because your lawyer's a gossip? No, I don't understand.
Because if they're all hanging on grandpa's land as their retirement account, I bet mom's going to call the grandchildren real quick and be like, by the way, you get nothing.
Oh, yeah. I've made terrible life choices, but I think I'll turn it around now.
Okay, you want one more? Here's
let's
last
do
one.
More.
You're live from the past.
That was awful.
Ooh. Thank you. I just come up with that right now on the slide.
I hated that so much.
Dear Life from the Path, I recently met a man who, even though he asked me to sit down and have a coffee with him, then said he isn't marriage or dating minded. I decided to avoid him, and I'm trying to rid my thoughts of him, but it's difficult because I feel drawn to him.
Wow.
The last time I saw him, I sat down with him.
It's Count Dracula.
And he asked to hold my hand. I understand that in dating, we may find out that we are not going to get married, but we haven't even dated yet. I suppose I appreciate that he's admitting he already knows he doesn't like me enough to marry me, but why ask to hold my hand then? Why ask me to sit down for coffee? It's hard to meet men where I live.
How old is she?
54.
We're almost there. And it has been a long time since I was in a serious relationship. To meet someone who seems like a good catch and then be told this is upsetting. Is he playing hard to get?
Listen to me. If you have any thoughts of this man being a good catch before you even sat down for coffee the one time, you are out of your mind. All of this screams, you need help and are out of your mind. Find someone to confide in that can tell you that this is insane. That you're like, I'm drawn to this man. I've never had coffee with him before, but I found out that he doesn't want to date me and he's not marriage-minded, but he wants to hold my hand, and I just missed the touch of a man's hand. Like, come on. It's been a long time since there's been a relationship. You're 55. You are 55 years old. Rhonda, listen to me. Listen to me right now. You go find some lady friends, and you help them. You let them speak into your life. Good lady friends.
Something weird. Something
find
weird
married
this.
Ladies to speak into your life and recognize... You're crazy.
Here's the thing. I need, this is for all the ladies out there. I want you to remember
that
you need to stop thinking that the men are like the ladies.
Yeah, they're not playing hard.
When
to
the
get.
Man goes, hey, I'm not looking for a serious relationship, he means he's not looking for a serious relationship.
But he wants to touch you.
Yeah right, exactly. I want all of the perks of that with none of the commitment. Yeah.
He's found a subtle and soft way to say, I'm a skeez, and I want you to be open-minded to engage with my skeezy behavior. He's been very open about that. It is a woman's – there's something very beautiful about a woman's hopefulness and a belief that a lady might do something similar. And they're like, oh, I've seen ladies behave this way. That is not this man. That is not most men in general. They're just – they're pretty straightforward. This is why you find them both offensive and funny, is some of the straightforward things that men do. And so when the man tells you, this is not intrigue, this is not like, oh, I think I can change him, oh, he's been hurt before, and maybe he's saying this because he's cautious. It's not any of those things.
He's mysterious.
No, he's a skeez, and he told you he was a skeez, and he wants to touch your hand and hold you because he's trying to make his way into his skeezy behavior. And
no.
So
he wants your Snapchat.
Yeah.
He just wants to hold a... He wants to hold some phalanges while he's drinking some coffee.
That's the grossest thing I've ever heard you say.
You can buy phalanges.
He has done you. He has done you. You can buy phalanges. I hate that so much. Please make that the name of the episode.
Done.
He has done you the greatest service he could ever do by showing his cards immediately and letting you know, run away from me.
Yep.
All right.
Well, hold on. Sickle, anything we missed?
You can
I agree. That was a good one for all the ladies out there.
This is what I'm talking about.
Why did I hate it more the second time?
I'm upgrading the sickle to junior producer. He's got all the traits of a man who can run this program.
That is assuming that this program is in fact running.
Okay, to be fair though, it takes at least 11 minutes for Ben to answer a question. The sickle gets through the answer in approximately 11 seconds.
We could work on expanding more things that nobody cares about.
The amalgamation between the two of you is the perfect host.
You could have used one sentence and you'd use 15.
Next time, try to go to 16.
Ben, that was a really long, bloviated answer. Have you just tried saying, yep?
Okay, next time I'm going to do playing the part of Ben as the sickle. I'm going to do it in the next show.
We're going to get out of here after 15 minutes.
I agree.
Secular says, I wish that when he asked for your hand, but not in marriage, you had asked him if he intended to read your palm. I agree that he's sending you...
What?
I have no comment.
I agree that he's sending you mixed messages. However, only one person can answer your legitimate questions, and that person is him.
He is not sending mixed messages.
Yeah. He has sent literal, most straightforward message he could possibly say.
I love
this. He is saying, in tandem, I do not want to date or marry you, but I'd really like to hold your hand and see where that goes. There is no clearer message that he could send.
Yeah.
You are out of your mind.
This is the problem with having only women as counsel, is because you both are now on the train that he's some kind of mysterious Zhivago. But this is not. He's not.
But
he's a rum-dumb moron.
But not dateable. Did he mean like, but not dateable yet? Is so there a set of criteria that he could reach to be dateable?
I could look in his eyes and I could tell he wanted more. Yeah, he wanted to hold your hand more. Yeah. That's it. He don't want to date you. He said so.
He's not an opportunity. He's a mistake.
I could buy phalanges, but nothing else.
Just like this program. Thanks for listening to Live from the Path. We appreciate you hanging out with us this week. If you have any feedback on the show or you want to encourage Mike or you just want to send us your favorite emoji, I like the boat. That's 515.
I like those business fish. You guys ever use those guys? Oh, I love him.
I've never met a person who used business fish except for you.
I love business fish.
Just an unnecessary fish in a gentleman's suit with a thumbs up at something I've done. Or like cooking sushi. Huzzah!
Business fish.
Cooking sushi?
Yeah.
That's gross. Business. A fish making sushi?
Yeah, that's the kind of choices he makes.
That's disgusting, Mike.
Agreed, Mike. This is disgusting.
There's one for every life situation. It's so good.
Okay, actually, if you want to use the Life from Path complaint line to send the emoji that the rest of your family told you to stop using, that's what I want.
Oh, yeah, we'd love that.
Yeah. 515-517-0085. Call or text. We'd love to hear from you. Big thanks to Will the Sickle for being here on the program. Thanks for stopping in, Will.
He thought the thumbs up
would
do it.
Yeah, no problem.
It's radio. The translation of the thumbs up has to have a verbal acknowledgement.
Hey, a quick sidebar. I tried to describe the thumbs up as the hillbilly high five. Do you guys feel like that's legit?
We should end the show now.
We may see you next week. Good form may prevail, and the show gets canceled by the unknown people who regulate it. In the meantime, be faithful to the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Past. Bam, bam.